So we are holding on. We're holding on Ein Ches on the Beis. Check that. Rather, we're holding on Ein Ches on the Aleph. Rather, fourth line. Okay, we're in the middle of working out the issue of min v'minay versus min v'she'enay minay. We said in our Mishnah that if you have blood of korbanos that got mixed up with that got mixed up with blood of other animals or of domestic or wild animals, then you can go ahead and sprinkle it. You can go ahead and, well, what you do actually is the Tanakhama said roya noisekiru umayim. We consider that other blood as if it were water, and therefore we see if that would have been enough water to dilute the blood of the korban, so it wouldn't look like blood anymore, then you can't sprinkle it, otherwise not. Rabbi Huda said, ain dam mevatel dam, blood is not mevatel blood, therefore even if you have a little bit of blood of a korban mixed in with a lot of other blood, you can still go ahead and sprinkle it. So we're in the middle of working out the issue of min b'minay or min b'she'enay minay. The last thing we quoted in this connection was we had a mishnah actually that said that if you had a bucket full of rukin, it's saliva,
right,
and you totaled it, then no good because the saliva does not get removed easily by the water because it's thick stuff. Therefore, the keli that it was in, that's a chitza, therefore the keli remains tame.
Even if the keli is open and it pours in?
I mean, eventually, if you were to leave it in there long enough, then I suppose. But we're talking about if you just toggled this and took it out, as you usually do, fairly quickly. Then, and Rashi points out, by the way, it doesn't even mean if it was completely full. I mean, the reason why we're mentioning full is because later in the Mishnah, it's relevant to talk about full or empty. Here, it's even if it was a small amount of saliva, same thing. On the other hand, if it was full of meraglayim, of urine, then we treat that as if it was water. So then, in other words, you can have the concept of hashaka, that once it touches the water or the mitzvah, then the keli becomes tahor. And then we said, if it was full of meshachas, if it was full of paradrum of water, then you need to have more water than meshachas to be mevatel then. So we said then that we assume that braisa goes to point of Yehuda, or that mission goes to point of Yehuda. We had a previous braisa that said that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't look at the question of roiv. He doesn't look at whether there's more. He looks at roiv. He says that white wine, for example, we consider like red wine, and looks at how much will you need to dilute the color. So Abaye said that the answer is that there's Rabbi Yehuda's own opinion, and then there's the opinion of Rav Gamliel. Rav Gamliel holds that ein dam mevatel dam, and so forth. And Rabbi Yehuda himself holds that as long as you have roy, that you could have bissel min b'minay in roy. So,
there's a difference between bissel from roy and bissel from, bissel.
Right. Well, I mean, the point is we were saying before in the first braita, about the white wine or the milk, when the Tanakhama there had said you go according to the Roy, Rabbi Huda had said you need more than that, you need enough to be able to dilute it had it been red wine.
So it doesn't go only by the color.
That's the point. In other words, what we're saying is we have two different opinions within what Rabbi Huda is saying. We have Rabbi Huda is saying that Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Gamliel, says ein dam mevatel dam and so forth. Rabbi Yehuda himself would hold that it could be bottle in roy, just as if it was min v'she'enay minay. Okay, so that was one answer. Rava Omar, Rava says he was.
You could say min v'minay
points
in roy, and
when
it's not
the minay. Well, if it's not the minay, that's the question. In other words, if we're saying over here. That sort of goes into what Tosfos discusses over here. That again, I mentioned at the end yesterday that Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi's explanation, and therefore Tosfos brings a different gusa in the Gemara over here. That in the Mishnah it's Meir Grain Roinos and Kila and Yayin, that you consider them as a stable, that if you consider them as a stable water, as a stable wine rather, and therefore you would need, and therefore you need not just a bare majority of rose, you would need enough to dilute, to dilute the whole thing. So in other words, the point is that according to that way of looking at it, the point is we would consider Mei Raglayim to be Min B'She'enim, right? But nevertheless, though, we still have, when it comes to Mei Chatos, we see that Min B'Mina is enough Roy. Mei Chatos looks like water. It's part Adum water. It had ashes of part Adum mixed into it, but not necessarily would there be enough ashes to see. Yeah. It's just like plain water, exactly. Okay. Anyway, fine. So what we said ultimately is this concept that we're saying min b'mina is not bottle unless it's completely diluted. That would be Rabbi Yehuda only according to Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Yehuda himself would hold a candy bottle and rose. So that's one answer. Rava says you don't need to say that. You could say that Rabbi Yehuda himself holds that ein dam levatel dam. That min b'mina is not bottle. And in fact, Tosfos points out it's throughout Shas and all the other half a dozen and more places where the Gemara brings this concept that Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'mina is not bottle, and just says generically that means Rabbi Yehuda says so without saying that he means in the name of Rabbi Gamliel. That's following Rava's answer that he's going to give over here. Once Rava enters this Braita versus this Mishnah against each other, then we can understand from that that Rabbi Yehuda himself holds min b'mina is not bottle. We don't need to say that he's only quoting Rabbi Gamliel but not agreeing with him. And therefore, so yeah. Okay.
You're saying min b'mina is not bottle. Translate to what
it means. It means, in other words, for example, in the case of these buckets that you're traveling in a mitzvah, it would mean that it's not enough that you just have more mitzvah water than wine or what have you in the bucket. It would mean that you'd have to have actually enough to actually wash it out, enough that the original wine or urine or whatever that may have or whatever that was in there is diluted.
You wouldn't see the difference.
Right. Well, right. Exactly. Okay. So Rava Amar, B'dli she'teichei tohor v'gabei tomei askinim. So Rava says, the case we're dealing with over here in this Mishnah, this Braisa, we're talking about a bucket where the inside of it is tohor and the outside of it is tomei. Which Midaraisa, there's no such thing. Midaraisa, clearly, either is tomei or isn't. Midrabbanan, you have cases where the outside of a keli can become tomei. In particular, what you have is if mashkin tmeim, you have various kinds of liquids that are tomei only midrabbanan. In general, the rule is that liquids that are tomei on a midrabbanan level, generally speaking, are rishon l'tumah. And midrabbanan they're able to be the family keli. It's a long story, but the gist of it is you have liquids that are tomei on a deraisa level. We're going to deal with some of them later on in the sugya. For example, the urine or other, various other body fluids that are zav or zava or what have you.
Any urine is
tomei? No, urine of a zav or a zava, or the urine of a zava or any person in that category, the tamei mishkav moshe, is tomei. So based on that, and based on some other considerations, the Chachamim made a rule that mashkin are tomei, that liquids in general are not only able to become tomei, which to a certain extent they can become tomei on a daraisa level, but when they do, they become a rishon l'tumah, even if the thing that was matame then is a sheni l'tumah. Usually you have tumah goes down, not up. Usually you have a rishon touches something and it becomes a sheni becomes a shlishi when it comes to truma, etc. When it comes to mashkin, the Chachamim made a gzera, that's one of the famous Yurchet Gavah, one of the famous 18 gzeras that they made, when Beit Shammai temporarily outnumbered Beit Hillel. For example, a person's unwashed hands, which are sheni l'truma, they touch liquids, they touch mashkin, and they can marish in the truma. Anyway, the Chachamim also made in that connection a rule that when mashkim on the tamei keli, there's a difference between the inside and the outside. If they touch only the outside of the keli, the Chachamim made a rule, only the outside becomes tamei. So therefore, when it comes to tovling, in principle, all you should have to do is tovle the outside. So that's what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with a bucket, says Rava, that only the outside of it is tamei, the inside of it is tahor. Which, by the way, a couple of the
afterwards.
Midaraita is tahor, yes. But that's not the point. So actually, a couple of the Achronim asked the question, In that case, what are we talking about? We had in the mission over there, they had May Chassas in there. How do you have Parah Adruma water in a Kali where the outside is Tomei and the inside is Tahar? First of all, when it comes to Parah Adruma, you don't have that distinction. The Chachamim made very strict rules as far as Parah Adruma. And one of them is that a Kali that even only the outside of it became Tomei Midrabanan, as far as May Chassas, as far as Parah Adruma water, the whole thing is considered Tomei. Second of all, anyway, Parah Adruma water has to be kept in what's called, as the positive is, in Makam Tahar, in a Tahar place. So you can't even have the Kali can be in a Tomei place, even if the Kali itself is Tahar. So how do you have a scenario over here? So one answer is that when we say Mei Chassas in the mission over there, we didn't mean that the Parah Adruma ashes were already placed in there. We just mean that it was water that was prepared for Parah Adruma use. Mayim Chayim is water from a spring, which is kosher to have the ashes mixed into it and used for sprinkling, but it hasn't yet reached the point of having the ashes put into it. It's called Kiddush. It's still only Mayim Chayim. It's only plain Mayim Chayim. Therefore, you would be allowed to keep it in such a case. The more stringent rules about Parah Adruma water don't apply to that, because it's not Parah Adruma water yet. Okay.
As soon as the ashes come in,
then you have different rules, right? Okay. So, Dimedina Sagilahu Behold the Food. So, says Rava, the strict din would be, therefore, okay, so you have to total this bucket, but strictly speaking, all you would need is a tiny amount of water has to overflow the lip of the cage. Why? Because the point is that the outside is tummy. That means the outside includes half of the thickness of the lip. So therefore, practically speaking, you have to have water flow over the lip in order to make sure that the whole lip has been inside the mikveh. But you only need a tiny bit in principle. But then the Rabbanon made a gzera that you need in the case of the case where you said over there that if you have mei chassas in there, we said you need more mikvah water in there than mei chassas. The reason is the Rabbanon who degazibu, the Rabbanon made a gzera, jomachayis alayo v'le mevatalei, v'le mastalei really is supposed to be, because, what is it? This person has water that he intends to use for Parah Adruma. He may try to save it. He may think to himself, you know what? But if I allow the mikvah water to get into my kevi, which contains water ready for Parah Adruma, then it's going to pasul. The water has to be pure mayim chayim. So therefore, he may think to himself, let me make sure that when I tovel it, I don't allow any water to get into the inside of it, and that would be a problem because then he's not toveling complete outside of it. Therefore, to be on the safe side, that Rabbanan made a gzera that the kivin the ikiri buya lo tzarech. So therefore, once you have more mikvah water in there than Parah Adruma water, then you don't need anything else. Even in other words, what Rava is saying. The point is you do have to tovel the whole thing. You do have to tovel the whole thing inside because again, you have to have that water goes over the rim. But what Rabbi Yehuda says is like this. Min b'mino is not bothered. But in this case, ever, until it's completely diluted. In this case, in principle, you shouldn't have to tovel almost anything of the inside at all. All you should need is a bit of mikvah water to flow over the rim. But in order to make sure that the person actually does that he doesn't just tovel it only the outside and not tovel the rim at all, so says Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah that we quoted from the Kabbalah, therefore, make sure that it actually flows in enough that you have more mikvah water in there now than Parah Adruma water. In other words, it has to have been less than half full of Parah Adruma water, and now when you put it completely under the water, then you have momentarily at least you have more mikvah water in there than Parah Adruma water. At that point, we can be sure you've toggled the Kali properly. But that's true. So that therefore, practically speaking, you'd want to pour it out before you do that. But the point is, if you did that, In other words, what Rabbi Yehuda would say is, if you have more mechassas than mikvah water in there, then you can't even treat it as if it was min b'she'en in minu and say it's bottle b'goy, because then you don't have any kind of bittul. So therefore, then you have a problem of chassisa, unless you were to leave it long enough in there that actually all the water would mix. But if you have less than half mechassas in there, then the Chachamim will allow it, says Rabbi Yehuda, even though it's min b'mino, and normally it shouldn't be bottle at all. But in this case, since in principle you didn't really have to tovel the inside at all, because only the outside was tummy, then therefore the Chachamim will allow it. So we can still say that Rabbi Yehuda is consistent between the Braita and the Mishnah to say that you always need, that always when it comes to min b'mino, you always need it to be completely not just bustle with more, that you have more of one thing than another, but then you have bustle to the extent that it's completely diluted and loses its identity.
So there,
in that one case, we don't go by Rav. Which, Tosafot points out, in that case, you would have to say necessarily that Rav's answer only refers to the case that may happen. Rav's answer still wouldn't work for the case where we said that if the bucket was full of Mei Raglayim, that we consider it if it was Mayim. It would only work for the case that may happen. Okay. So that explains Rabbi Huda's opinion, and therefore, again, as Tosafot says, when we find throughout Shas that the Gemara takes it as a given that Rabbi Huda says min b'mino is not bottle, this is where we get it from. We get it from Rava's explanation over here that Rabbi Huda does hold min b'mino is never bottle, and only in this case, because technically you didn't really need bissel with it at all, you just needed that the rim of the case should get total. Okay. Omar Rava. So Rava says in this connection, Here are the rules as far as this. Omer Rabbanan B'Taima, there are places where the Chachamim say, here we're going to be talking more about the Chachamim's opinion rather than the Huda's. Because Allah is like the Chachamim. Omer Rabbanan B'Taima, there are times when the Chachamim, and here we mean the Chachamim generically anyway, we don't mean the Chachamim against the Huda necessarily, we mean the whole concept of Bittul Midrabbanan. Because again, the Daraisa, Bittul would just be one and two, and that's that. Omer Rabbanan B'Taima, there are sometimes when the Chachamim look at the taste of it to determine how much you need for bittul for it, so that things in other words where there's a taste involved, you need enough of the heter to be mevatel the taste of it, which typically is 1 in 60. But Omer Rabbanan B'Rubah, then there are times when the Chachamim tell us that roiv is enough. And then there are times when it doesn't depend on taste and it doesn't depend on roiv, it just depends on the appearance, on the color of it. For example, when it comes to a mikveh, it's not relevant, you know, we had the case before, for example, of a bucket full of white wine or milk that was dipped into a mikveh. So Aaron was saying at the end yesterday that, you know, you could go into such a mikveh and get drunk because it may taste of wine. But the fact is, it's not the taste that's the important thing, it's the color that's the important thing. If it doesn't look like water anymore, then you have a problem. If it still looks like water, then you have, okay. So a mikveh is an example where the taste doesn't matter, and on the other hand, you don't just say roiv, where it goes according to the color.
So, you know, on paper, you may have a problem there, on paper, when it's full green.
No, because one distinction you do have is the color of a mikveh matters only when it's nishtana matnas gavar acha, when the color changed because something else was spilled in there, juice or what have you. If it was nishtana matnas acha, if it just changed on its own, meaning basically, you know, you have algae or whatever growing on the sides of the mikveh, and then they get, then that's not an issue.
Who made that up?
That's how it is. Yeah.
That's the point.
If it's the shana machnas asma, if it's just changed because of changes within the water itself, because of stuff from the sides of the mikveh or whatever that gets dissolved in it, then that's it. Okay. So the rules are like this, says Rabbah. Min b'she'enu minay b'taima. When you have one type of thing mixed with a different type of thing, then you go according to the taste. That's when you need bittul b'shishi. Min b'minoi, if it's mixed min b'minoi, one thing into another thing of the same type, where then there's no difference in flavor, then b'rubah. B'rubah. Then it goes according to roiv. Then it goes according to roiv, and you even have, again, you don't need shishin in that case. Again, you have a case in Shulchan Aruch, it's called talubas yavish for yavish, when you have dry mixed with dry, where then, yes, a simple majority is enough to be master. If you have a case over there, one piece of issur that falls into two pieces of heter and isn't recognizable, the mixture is mutter. Now, you have a machlokes rishonim, can you eat all three of them at once? Can the same person eat all three of them? Or maybe you have to distribute it among different people, etc. But the basic concept is that it is bottle verdoid.
That's more linear than
the Daraisa is 1 and 2. Daraisa anything would be 1 and 2, whether it's min b'shein and min. Actually, no. What we said before is, we said before, in connection with the thing of Rish Lakish, we said that this that we're saying that there's tam versus roiv is d'oraisa. We said that when there's nois and tam, that is d'oraisa. We thought to say that Rish Lakish had said that not, but we explained what he said differently. So no, these first two things that we said, actually maybe all three of these things, are d'oraisa. This that we're saying, yeah, in fact, Tosfos discusses over here that since we just mentioned the word tam, rather than saying that you need shishim or you need meya, Tosfos starts by saying that implies that we're talking here strictly the d'oraisa level of things. We're not even getting into d'rabbanan. D'rabbanan, there are rules on top of this. There are things which are never possible. But this that we're saying, in other words, when Rava says omur rabbanan, he doesn't mean, we're not talking about things that are d'rabbanan, we mean that the Chachamim have summarized the rules d'oraisa as follows. Okay, so again, min b'sha'enei mina goes according to the tam. So again, the d'oraisa, that wouldn't necessarily mean that you need 60 times as much. It would depend on what the thing is. We'll learn, and when we get to call in Bez Hashem, and we discuss, we have a sugya in that connection with Gidan Noshe, in connection with Bokhul Apollov. So the Gemara mentions over there, the Gemara mentions Tanoim, who held in certain cases that much less than 60 is enough to be Rato, 45, 47. In principle, what you do is you give the mixture to a Goyish chef to taste and see if he tastes any flavor of the issue in there, and you go according to him. But practically speaking, it ends up being, in most cases, 60, but that concept of 60 is the drama. Yeah.
Okay. So he was saying
that's the timer. So whatever it would make, whatever it would take to be mirapal the flavor, it could be more than 60, it could be less than 60. Okay. Minbimina, again, would be viruba, would be a simple majority, two against one. And when it's a matter of color, then b'mara, then it depends whether it's color. Okay, so that's rather summarizes, and those are the basic dinim of bittul. So now, going back to the beginning of the sugya, we started saying at the beginning of the sugya that Rish Lakish had said that Isurim can be mevatel each other. We have a case there where you have a person eats a kezias of pig, or a kezias of noisa, and a kezias of tameh, the way Rashi learns it. Or, as Tosfos has said, you had one piece that had two kezias and a pig, and one of noser, and another one that had two of noser and one of pig, etc. And you ate them together. So we said that Rish Lakish had said one iser can be, each iser can be mevatel the other one. Therefore, it's asur stuffik, and you won't get malchus. Pliga did Rav Elazar. That concept of Rish Lakish disagrees with something that Rav Elazar said. So Amar Rav Elazar, kishen she'en mitzvot mevatel to the iser. Rav Elazar says just as mitzvot cannot be mevatel each other, as we will see in a second. The same thing, Isurim can't be mevatel each other either. So according to Rav Elazar, in that scenario, if a person took Pigel and Moser and Tomei and ate a kezias of each one, when he's chewing them, you end up with bits of them between other ones, and on the face of it should be bottle. Rav Elazar says no such thing. Isurim are not mevatel each other. Well, as far as any Yisurim. Now, the Rambam paskins like Rav Elazar. Most of the other Rishonim paskin like Rish Lakish, which in that case, that leads to the case that I was mentioning yesterday, where you have a pot with 59 kezaisim of heter, and one kezaisim of Caleb falls in, and one kezaisim of dam falls in. So according to Rav Elazar, according to the Rambam, that wouldn't work, because the Issa, yeah, it would be traced, because the Caleb can't be Mavassal the Dam, and vice versa, whereas according to most of the other Rishonim, it would. Okay. So the Gemara says, Man Shamat Lejama in Mitzvah Mavassal Zuasu. Okay, which Tanabi find hold of this concept that one Mitzvah is not Mavassal the other one? Hilohi. The answer is that it's according to Hilohi. The Tanya, as we look at Rav Elazar is an Amora. So he's saying as a given that Kishen She'en Mitzvot Mevatel Zuasu, that just as, like, so to speak, it's obvious that Mitzvot are not Mevatel each other, so the Gemara is looking, where's the source that Mitzvot are not Mevatel each other? And the answer is we find it in what Hillel does.
And you should make those.
Mitzvot mevatel zuasu means, in other words, if you eat two things in mitzvah together, then one is not mevatel the other. So in that particular case that Hillel is talking about, it comes out of kula. There comes out of chomer from it, and okay, fine, but that happens sometimes. It's not the first time.
So according to Hillel, you wouldn't have to put kula off on
the way. No, what is one?
They're not mevatel each other.
No. You have a separate machlokas whether whether Shabbos and Yom Tov is non-filling to you or not. In mitzvahs and mitzvahs Lewis, it means that if you do two mitzvahs at the same time, one is not mevatel the other. The Tanya, one second. The Tanya, Omru all about Hillel Azotin, Shoyer Kochan Mevatel Achas Vayislan. They said about Hillel that he used to combine together, he used to wrap together, all of them, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror together, as we do by the Seder, Vayichlan, and he would eat them together, Mishum Shenemra, Matzah, Sumeroyim, Yechluhu, because the Pasuk says that you should eat them with Matzah and with Maror, and therefore, so he understood that means, literally, that it means you have to actually eat them together, not just one after the other, as the Chachamim say, and therefore, the point is, Master is a mitzvah midaraisa, and that exists always, whether there's a mitzvah midaraisa, whether there's a korban pesach, or whether there's not. Mara is daraisa when there's a mitzvah midaraisa and when there's a korban pesach. When there's not, then it's drabon. Hillel lived in the time when the mitzvah midaraisa was sin. All three mitzvahs are daraisa. And the point is, he's saying that one mitzvah is not mevatel to the other. According to the Chachamim, they would. Therefore, according to the Chachamim, you have to eat them separately, because then you're going to have the problem that we had before. That a bit of masa is going to get between the bit of maror and be mevatel of it. And then you're not going to yoke to the mitzvah. But Hillel doesn't hold that concept.
Hillel not holding they're not mevatel each other. Does that mean that you have to eat them together, or can you
take
them separately?
Well, so that's the thing. So actually, Tosfos in Sotin, and then a couple of other Rishonim asked the question that how do we know that? Okay, so Hillel was saying over here that they're not mevatel each other. Where does that tell us that Hillel says the proper mitzvah is to do it that way? Maybe it's a thing. He could do it that way. One of the answers is that in that case, then Hillel wouldn't have done that way every year. He would have done that some years, and then some other years he would have done it differently in order to demonstrate that it's not actually required. Or, I think the Spartana says that he would have done like we do nowadays, where you eat matzah and maror separately, and you also eat them together. Okay, he might have done it the other way around. He might have first eaten them as korban and then eaten them separately, but whatever. If he held that it's only you could do that rather than a mitzvah, then he would have done something like that in order to demonstrate. Like this, it shows that he holds that is the proper way to do the mitzvah. Whereas the Chachamim disagree with him, and since the Gemara tells us, in the end, the halacha is not determined like Hillel or like the Chachamim. That is why we do both. That's why by the Seder we eat Matzah and Maror separately, and then again we eat them together as korban. Especially because actually you have another issue over there also, because nowadays Maror being Dirabbanan, you definitely would say that the Gemara says over there that a Dirabbanan would be mevatel a daraisa. So if you were to eat Masa and Moro together now, you know, we're on the Korban Pesach, obviously, then you would have a real problem, because unless you ate more than a kezias of each one, if you ate exactly a kezias of each one, you'd have the problem that the Moro, which is Dirabbanan, would be mevatel the Masa, which is daraisa. Therefore, that is why we supposed to eat them separately, and only after that, in order to do it as they serve for the time of the Bais Mikdash, like Hillel did, then we eat them together.
We cannot say that by having eaten them combined, the canceling of the mitzvah we did before to eat them separately.
No, it doesn't. No, because we were already used to the mitzvah by eating them separately.
Also,
No. Mitzvahs and mevatel, we mean if you're doing them at the same time.
Well, that's my question.
But you're not doing that at the same time. You're eating matzah, then you're eating maror, then you're eating korban. That eating the korban was not mevatel the matzah and maror that you ate before. So to answer your question, for example, as far as tefillin, no, mitzvah mevatel zero. We'd be talking about where you have, again, you're doing two different mitzvahs, but one of them, you're talking about the question, is one of them mevatel the other one? Here you're talking about, if Shabbos, if Yom Tov, if tefillin, is it the proper time to be putting on tefillin? It has nothing to do with being mevatel, with one being mevatel the other. But the question is this a time when the Torah wants you to put on, when the Torah wants you to put on tefillin?
Some people put two tefillin at the same time, one in Russia and one in Turkey.
So that actually, Actually, we're going to talk about that, and we'll talk about that, that's the Shem later on in connection with Baltoisis. The answer is that over there, you wouldn't say mitzvah mevatel zuazu, because Memonachshach, you have only one, the mitzvah is to wear only one or the other of them. Either the halacha is like Rashi, or the halacha is like Rebbeinu Tam. The halacha is not like both of them. So therefore, you can't say, it's not an issue of mitzvahs being mevatel each other. You may have a different issue of Baal Tosis, that you're not allowed to add to the mitzvah. But that's another issue which we'll deal with in connection with the next mission, I bet. Okay. Fine. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to get back to to the issue of getting back to the issue of min minoy and what Rabbi Huda says about it. Talking about we learn in a brayta. Sausam shall zav the zava. If you have the earthenware of a container that was used by a zav or a zava. So now in those days they didn't have plumbing. When people had to go to the bathroom, people had to urinate or whatever, they would do it into a pot, into an earthenware container often. As I mentioned before, the urine and various other body fluids of a zava is tamei midaraisa. Unlike various other liquids that I said that are only tamei midarabanan, urine of a zav and then shiflas zera and a few other body liquids of his are tamei midaraisa. So now, if they urinate into an earthenware keli, then that keli becomes tamei from that. So how central zav the zava? So now, if you have these earthenware containers that were used by a zav or a zava, and now let's say it was broken. So now the question is, what do we need to do in order to make those pieces of earthenware tahor so they're not metame anything that you might use them for in the future? And the problem is, even if they're dry, they've absorbed the urine, and therefore they're still tamei. Rashi in fact brings from a Mishnah in Kalim, from a Gemara in Nida, that if you were to take these pieces of earthenware, even after they're dry, and put them in an oven, and fire them up in an oven, it would make the oven tamei, because the liquid ends up coming out of it when they get heated up. So what do you do? The oven would become tamei from the liquid, because the liquids that are in the cheres and that are glued out, and then there would be the tamei there of an oven. So how central zav the zava? So these earthenware pieces that were used by a zav or a zava, tam rishon v'sheni tamei. The first time or the second time that you wash them, then they're still tamei, and the water that you wash them with is still tamei because it still absorbs some of the urine. Shlishi tamei. The third time already, it'll be tamei. Once you wash them three times, then it'll be tahor because any of the urine that they absorb will already come out into the water. And the water itself will be tahor as well. But medvar mamurim, shenotam will say to mind. Now what is this talking about? Says the braisa. If you wash them with water, avalo nothing will say to mind, but if you didn't wash them with water, what if you... Well, that's what it means, in other words, that you poured water inside. On the other hand, if you didn't pour water into them, what if you put into them meraglaim? What if you put into them urine of a person who's tahor, figuring that way you'll be mevatel the old urine that was in there, because urine from a regular person is tahor? No, afilu asiru tamei, then even the tenth time it'll be tamei, because min b'mino is not bottle, and the here you have min b'mino because they're both meraglaim. Rebbe Lezman Yaakov now says no. Shlishi afrisha enosam osechemayim. The third time is always tahor, regardless, even if you didn't use water, even if you used urine. The third time it'll be tahor because min is able to be bottled in mina. So therefore, the Gemara points out, man shamat leidam min b'mina leibotel, Rabbi Huda. Now, who did we find before who said that min b'mina is not bottle? That's Rabbi Huda. Therefore, we understand, therefore, that who is the Tanakama arguing in this braisa, arguing with Rabbi Lezman Yaakov? That must be Rabbi Huda. Now, the halacha, again, we said in our mission of the halacha was like a chamim, but besides that, also, Tosfos points out that we know we have a general rule, Mishnas Rabbi Lezman Yaakov kav v'nafi, that whenever Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says a din, the halacha is generally speaking like him. Since Rabbi Lezman Yaakov is speaking in this braisa, therefore that implies the halacha is like him, min b'min, it can be bottle by rose. So therefore that's what he says. That once you did the first two times already, then you already had rose, and then therefore you do the third time already, then you're good. By rinsing it three times, right? That's what Rabbi Lezman Yaakov is saying. You don't need water. You don't need min b'shein and minoy. Like the Yehuda would say, it's enough time min b'minoy that you rinse it three times in the mirror drying. Right. And that's halacha.
He goes against the Chachamim anyway.
No, because the Chachamim of our mission have said a similar thing. They said that min b'minoy is bottle. So we said over there that if blood of Karbanos is mixed with blood of non-Karbanos. So we said, well, so actually in the mission we said, Roy noy tefilu mayim. You're right. So it is different, actually. You're right. So in the case of the Mishnah, right, we said that if you have enough water, if it would have been enough, in volume to dilute the blood, then we can. Right. Okay. So the Gemara says it remains. But now I have a contradiction to this, that you're telling me, therefore, that you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that that because min b'mino is that min b'mino is not bottle, but in other words, but he would say that it can eventually become bottle or min. The Gemara says I have a contradiction because a braita says pishtan shetva'ata nida. If you have flax that was spun by a nida, now a nida is also one is like a zog or a zava in that regard, where her various bodily secretions or saliva in this case make things from it. When it comes to the point is that a nida's saliva is also one of the obvious tshuva, and the problem is when it comes to spinning flax thread, you constantly have to be moistening it. You constantly have to be moistening it with saliva in order to make it hold together. So this that was spun by nida mastitoi tahor. So now, if a person later on goes and moves this one of these flax threads, he remains tahor because by this time the saliva on it has dried. Saliva of a nida or a zava or what have you is metame, and similarly the other things are only metame as long as they're still moist. As long as it's still light. Once they dry, then
they are tummy, but
they're at that point they're not tummy anymore. They're not tummy. Rashi mentions that the Gemara in Nida learns it from a pasuk. The pasuk says the chiyorei kazav b'tahor. If a zav spits on a tahor, then the tahor becomes tummy, implying that it only applies as long as it's still light spit, as long as it's still moist, not once it dries. But if it was still moist, then if somebody were to move it, he would be chummy. Because you have the liquid, you have the saliva from her mouth that's on the thread that would make the person chummy. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if you wet it again with water, chummy, then still chummy because of her saliva. In other words, even though it was dried, Rabbi Yehuda said, well, no, because Rabbi Yehuda says if you put it in water, then it becomes moist again. So therefore, it'll become tamei mishum mashkepia, implying vafiu l'tshuva. So implying even if you washed it many, many times, he seems to be saying it's going to be tamei. Unlike the case of the charitzim tozav that we just said, that Rabbi Yehuda says that once you wash it with water three times, then it's tahor. So what's the difference? They also have bodily liquids of a zav, which are an avatoma, and we're saying three times washing them with water is enough. Why over here is Rabbi Yehuda saying that any time you would put it in water, it would become wet again. And it would become tummy again. It becomes tummy again. Tosfos actually discusses over here that you actually have a halacha in connection with saliva of a nida and these various other ones. You have a general rule that even if it is dry, but the circumstances are that if you were to put it 24 hours in warm water, it would become liquid again. It would become moist like it was before. Then it actually is still metame. So any material. In other words, we're talking about if you have, let's say, blood. Let's say the original context that Gemara talks about it over there in Nidah is in connection with blood of a Nidah, but the same thing applies to saliva and shikhlasera and so forth. That even if they're dry, if they're not so dry that you couldn't soak them in warm water for 24 hours and they'd be moist again, then they're still metame. The person starts by saying over here that here evidently we're talking about that. You did put it in warm water for 24 hours, and therefore it didn't, and still the saliva is not like it was before. You have water over there, but you don't have saliva again. Therefore it would be tahor, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing. But that's not what he's saying, that no, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if it became that dry, then it is tahor. What he means over here is, you, Rabbanan, are saying that when it's moist, and then it's metame, and of course I agree with that. Everybody agrees with that. Rabbi Yehuda is just saying that no matter how many times you rinse it, it's still going to remain tar. It's still going to remain tar. So again, the question is why, compared to the Charis and Cholzav. Okay. In the Charis and Cholzav, we said rinsing it three times is enough. And we didn't make a distinction over there whether right now they were dry or not. But
maybe
why?
If it's going to take the wall, it cannot solidify.
Nah. Yeah. And in that, yeah. The answer is, Amarapapa, Shiny Roach to Kodu. So Rapapa says it's different as far as saliva because that penetrates saliva. It penetrates very deeply into the linen thread. You can't really get it out, no matter how many times you rinse it. When it comes to the Ovit Shomer Aglaim, when it comes to the bucket that was used for Meir Aglaim, it does get absorbed, but not so strongly that rinsing it a few times won't get it out. Where materials are different. And by the way, we had an Avodah Zarah. We had a similar concept as far as Kalim that we used for Yain Nesach, where they were also, we said that since they were used for Yain Nesach, which is cold, then therefore you need some good rinsing or maybe scrubbing or whatever in order to capture them, but no more than that. When we usually say the usual thing that we know that Klei Cheres can't be captured, that's when they were used with hot things. Then they absorb and it can't come out again. Okay. Then the Mishnah had continued. It's out of the Gamma Psalm. We have the
Mishnah. The Hoffman is almost a mistake.
Well, right, because what is absorbed something only cold, or at least, I mean, fine, urine is body temperature, but body temperature is not considered hot in halacha. Hot would only be considered yatsila, and that's a few degrees higher than that. So in that case, then you just need a few times rinse. Again, Rabbi Huda would say that if you rinse it with water, then you're good, but if you rinse it with Meir Aglaim, then no good, because Mishra Minah is not bottled. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov will say that you can rinse it with water and you're good.
Okay.
With Meir Aglaim also, he said, right. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Nifar of the Dam of Sol and Yishot of Lama. We said that if blood of Korbanos gets mixed up with blood of Sulim, then you pour the whole thing into the Amma, into the water channel in the Beit HaMikdash, meaning it's possible to sprinkle on the Mizeach, and you just have to throw it out. And we said that, so we said, actually, we had two cases in the Mishnah. We had, if it got mixed with Dama Psulim, and we said you put it into the Amma, we also had, if it got mixed with Dama Pamsis, the blood that trickles out after, later on, you have the gush that comes out, which is Dama Nefesh, which is what you're supposed to sprinkle on the Mizeach, then you have Dama Pamsis. So then we also said Yishopach La'ama, but Rabbi Eliezer said that you don't have to, it's kosher. So the question is, B'mai Kamitzah, what is the underlying machloikas over here? I'm going to read the Gozian Zed of a Mitzvah Kamitzah. The machloikas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, regarding this case where it got mixed up with Dama Pamsis, is do we make Zeres when it comes to the Beis Hamikdash to prevent people from doing the wrong thing, even though it may cause the loss, and even though it may cause loss of kodshim, heft of kodshim. The marasava goes in, the marasava lo goes in. Namely, the Tanakhama holds you make to there. So if you have, therefore, blood, that kosher blood that was mixed with pasuk blood, or with tamsuk blood, even if there's not in there to be mevatalit, so therefore you don't even have the issue that we said before that might be bottled, min v'minoi, even then, Rav Zid says that the Mishnah means the Chachamim are saying the Chachamim are going to say discard it, because what if you're going to be machshir? What if people are going to think it's kosher in a case where there was more blood, where there was more blood of Kosel or more blood of Tamsis than there was of Dama Nefesh, and then it would be bottled on a Daraisa level. So therefore, so Rashi says like this: when it comes to the previous case in the Mishnah where it was mixed with blood of a behemoth or a chaya, fine. It's not that common that you have cholin in the azara in the first place. Therefore, we don't have to make such a zera that you might end up with a case where you have more cholin blood than kodshim blood, because it's not that common to have cholin blood there in the first place. But when it comes to psulin, it's common enough to have psulin of one kind or another in the business, especially they can become possible at some point after they were shechted. No, that's the point. In other words, if it was a roi, then it would be, if you had more blood of psulin than blood of the korban, then it would be possible on the daraisa level, because, according to the Chachamim, because blood is mevatel blood, therefore it's bottle. But even if you don't have that much, the Chachamim says your vid are still going to make a zera that we don't want people to be confused between the case where there's not more dama kamsis than dama nefesh versus where there is. Therefore, in both cases, we're going to tell you throw it out. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds that you don't make such a zera, the Chachamim are not going to make that kodshim are going to be ruined and become possible because of zera. So if you have more possible blood there than kosher blood, then sure, then of course it's possible on a daraisa level. But otherwise, I don't want to make this. Otherwise, he says the Chachamim are not going to make such a zera and then throw out a perfectly good korban because it got mixed in with some damatamsis or damatamsis. Okay, so like this. We said in the Mishnah, the Chachamim said that if blood of Kodshim gets mixed up with blood of Behema or Chaya, so we said you figure out how much blood of Behema or Chaya was there. If the amount of blood of Kodshim was, let's say, enough that if you diluted it in a gallon of water, that it wouldn't look like blood anymore, then now, if it got mixed into a gallon of Dam Behema or Dam Chaya, then it's also possible and you can't be better at it. But what would happen if it was mixed into less than a gallon? So it would be kosher still to sprinkle. Now we're talking about a case where it was mixed in with less than a gallon of blood of stool. So the Chachamim... A certain amount of blood of Kherim mixed with less than a gallon of stool. Where even if that blood of stool had been water, it wouldn't be enough to dilute the blood of the Kherim and make it not look like water. So the Chachamim would say that if it had been Dam Behema or Chaya, then it would be kosher still to sprinkle on the Mizeach. Why? Because there's no reason to make it Zera in that case. Dam Behema or Chaya is not that common in the Azara in the first place that we should have to make it Zera. But if it was blood of Sulin, the Chachamim are concerned, if you allow him to sprinkle it when it was mixed into less than a gallon of Dam Sulin, you might end up with a case where it's mixed into more than a gallon, where it would be bottle, as we said before, and nevertheless you're going to think it's kosher and go sprinkle it anyway. Therefore, the Chachamim are saying, let's make it Zera, that let's not allow you to sprinkle it either way. Regardless whether the Dam Sulin was a gallon or less than a gallon. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer would say, you don't do that. You're not going to pass for a korban. You're not going to tell us throw away the blood of a korban and make the korban possible because of a gzera like that. If it got mixed into more than a gallon of blood of psalim, of course, throw out the whole thing. But if it got mixed into less than a gallon, and therefore it's not possible, go ahead and sprinkle it.
The question talking about blood makes sense of gzera, which amounts to making a korban that's possible.
Because as we said before, because it's Sheval Tasa, they're saying that they're able to override a ginger, right? So when it comes to doing something passively, in this case they're telling you passively set the blood aside, or actually okay, they're telling you it's not really passive, whatever, they're telling you pour into the Amma, but that may also pour into the Amma may also mean after it comes after it's left overnight. Maybe you wait till it's left overnight and then you pour it into the Amma. Whatever. The point is that the Chachamim are saying, yes, we're gonna make such a data. That's how it is. Tosfos has a different explanation of that. So Tosfos says, if that's the whole thing, then why isn't Rabbi Yehuda arguing in this case also? Rabbi Yehuda should come in over here and say, look, in dam levatel dam, therefore there's no reason for a gzera, because either way it's not possible. And we see he doesn't. Rabbi Eliezer argues, you don't see Rabbi Yehuda arguing in this part of the Mishnah. Right. So Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos explains that the gzera is what would happen. Not that you have a problem if it's mixed into more or less than a gallon, but if you were to allow such a thing, when dam kosher is mixed into dam kosher, what might happen is people might end up thinking that dam kosher itself is kosher, all by itself is kosher to sprinkle on the mizeach, or dam atamsis itself is kosher to sprinkle on the mizeach, and that's for sure not. That's not even a question of bittul. That's a question of taking something which is kosher and sprinkling on the mizeach. So therefore, it says Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim are going to make Zera to not allow that. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about such a thing. And again, when it comes to Behema and Chaya, there's no reason to make such a Zera, because again, you don't have blood of Behema and Chaya often enough in the Azara, and then people know that you don't sprinkle it. Okay. Fine, that's what it is. Rav Papa, I'm a Bekula Amad Goyes. When Rav Papa says no, everybody would agree you do make such a Zera. We're not worried about Hefsid Kodshim. All it is the hoch of the damatamsis must be the rabbish al damanefesh committee. The machloikas of Eliezer and the Chachamim would be, is it a common possibility that there might end up being more damatamsis than damanefesh? Again, damanefesh is the original gush that comes out after the shechita, which you catch in the bucket over there in the mizra, and you take it over to the mizrach before. Afterwards, you have damatamsis trickling out. Is it likely that you might end up with more damatamsis than damanefesh? Marsav Shchiach or Marsav Shchiach. So the Chachamim hold it is a common possibility. It ends up being more. So therefore the Chachamim will say that in that case we make a zera regardless whether it was more or was not more, because it might end up being that it actually was more. And then in that case then you really would have a problem. So we mean it. So therefore, they made the greater, even if in this particular case, Dama Tamsis was less than Ramana.
Yeah,
purpose of the Gzeira is that people should not end up sprinkling, that people should not end up sprinkling in a case where Dama Kamsis overrides Dama Nefesh, where there's more Dama Kamsis than Dama Nefesh.
People would know.
They might not know. Where's Rabbi Eliezer? Where's Rabbi Eliezer? Where's Rabbi Eliezer? It's not common enough for that to be a situation, so therefore it's no different than a case where it was mixed up with blood of COVID.
By definition, is that something?
No, not by definition. Not necessarily. That Rabbi Eliezer would hold that it's not common, that it's more common that most of the blood that comes out of the behemoth is Dama Nefesh. Whereas the Chum disagree. It might be that not necessarily. You might have that there's a gush that comes out, fine, but then you have, if you add up all the Dama Tamsis that comes out afterwards, it might add it could end up being more. And then if you were to catch that in the Kali, it would be Mubato the Dama Nefesh. So therefore the Chum are going to say, make a Zera either way, if there's any Dama Tamsis mixed in, whereas Rabbi Eliezer would say there's no reason to make such a Zera. So it's not common enough. Okay. He wants to be slain a little Papa. I can understand according to the Papa. And the Katani is out of Dama Sulin Yishapak La'ama, but Dama Tamsis Yishapak La'ama, then that explains why the Mishnah takes the Sulin versus Dama Tamsis and puts them as separate parts. The Mishnah says it's gotten mixed up with Bodhap Sulin, meaning, in other words, either. So in the Mishnah, Yadda, where Rashi has said over there that Sulin over there means, for example, Reveya or Nirva, or it means that where the Korban originally was kosher, but then it was shechted, where the Chutz was Mane or Chutz was Mekoimo. Rashi Ksabyad over there actually has said specifically it means Chutzus Mane and Chutzus Mekoimo, and the first thing to talk about, because if it was blood of Reveya and Nirva, not necessarily would Rabbi Eliezer be saying sprinkle it on Mizeah. Would not necessarily be talking about then you could have the situation that we discussed previously where Rabbi Eliezer might say sprinkle it and consider it as if it was water. So that factors into it also. But anyway, the point is, so therefore, according to the Papa, we understand. The Mishnah says, as a blanket statement, that if it got mixed up with blood of Sulin, then you spill it out. And there, Rabbi Eliezer doesn't disagree, because there's no reason for him to disagree. He would agree that the blood of the Sulin is a vassal, the kosher blood. And then, the Damatamsis, he shrub up the Amma. Then he continues, if it was mixed up with Damatamsis, then you pour it into the Amma. Fine, because then he, and then Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, because he says that, like the Papa says, that it's not usual for Dama Tamsis to be more than Dama Nefesh, therefore there's no reason for Zera. Error, little Zid, but the question is, according to the Zid, where the Machloikas is, whether you make Zera, La'avinu v'lisinu. Why doesn't the Mishnah combine them together? The Dama, Nis'ara v'Dama Psulin, or v'Dama Tamsis, Yishapak v'Ama, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, that not. Because according to him, Rabbi Eliezer would have the same Tzavara when it comes to one as when it comes to the other. If it's just a matter of Zera, whether that he's Gozer, when you don't have more apostle blood than kosher blood, then he should argue the same thing when it comes to blood of Sulim as when it comes to blood of Tamsis. Either way, the fact that he doesn't seems to imply like a Papa. And the answer is Kasha, you're right. If one should observe, it would be a Kasha why the Mishnah phrased it that way and didn't put them all together.
Why he doesn't, we don't know.
So Kasha in the Gemara of Mies is not the same as Tjurta. We haven't completely slogged up those vids. Those vids could find some way of answering why the Mishnah phrased it the way it did. But nevertheless, it still fits better according to the Papa's explanation. So therefore, and the bottom line is, the halacha is like a chachamim either way. The halacha is like a chachamim that whether it was mixed with blood of Sulim or whether it was mixed with Dama Tamsis, either way, you pour it out into the Amma and the Korban is possible.